You get dickheads in any society.
I never said that I thought it would be bad.
Are you high now?
Yeah.
Hey, Sarah McPhee with you for Hack. And if you've ever walked down a busy street, you've probably been waved down by some charity guy asking you to save the planet or help feed kids in Africa. You go on Facebook and someone's asking you to sign a petition or sponsor their fun run. And then there's your mate who's always banging on about going veggo. There are so many causes, so many things we're meant to care about. So how do you choose what really matters? You're about to meet a world-famous philosopher who reckons he's got the answers. And I'd love to hear from you too. 1300 055536 or text me 0439 75 7555. What do you care about?
I care about happiness and the happiness of others.
More equality in sport for women and less drugs in sport for everyone.
Alzheimer's awareness.
I care about animals, specifically dogs.
I care about environment.
I care about having a good time. I like having fun, you know.
You're listening to Hack.
Honestly, I just go with the flow.
On Triple J.
We're about to meet some people doing amazing things, but to introduce them, I have to give a really big language warning. Now's the time to turn down the radio for a moment if you're offended by bad language. These guys are thinking a lot about what issues matter most to them, and they want you to think about what matters to you as well. They're a group called the Fuck Givers, and they're asking us to, well, give a fuck in whatever way suits us best. Sarah White caught up with a self-described fuck giver to bring you this story.
So, the Fuck Givers, we're all about unlocking human potential. And by that I mean we help people find purpose and we connect other people so that they can fulfil their purpose.
Meet Sarah Rickards, co-founder of the Fuck Givers, where, to put it bluntly, people meet to give a fuck, whether it's giving a fuck about homeless people or the environment.
What I've learned from working in the sustainability space for a number of years is that sometimes eyes roll when you use the word sustainability or climate change. And so we started asking people, what do you give a fuck about? And you know what? Most people give a fuck about something. And so I give a fuck about connecting people and helping them unlock their potential and achieve their goals.
The movement started up a year ago, and they're currently at 1,250 active fuck givers, doing stuff like giving someone a new leg.
So we're just going down to Wollongong to meet Jen and hopefully Dan to have a chat to them about an exciting project that we're working on to build Dan, who recently lost his leg to cancer, a brand new robotic prosthetic.
Dan lost his leg because of cancer in September last year. Prosthetic legs are expensive, and the only one he could get was from Medicare. It's bulky and uncomfortable. And it's been a really traumatic experience.
Have you ever met Dan before?
I've never met Dan before in my life. I'm really good friends with his wife, Jen. But when I heard about what happened, I was just really compelled to help them.
Hey!
Hello! So good to see you.
You too.
This is Dan.
Me too. So excited.
There's a few issues that come up when you lose your leg. I'm a below knee amputee, so I do have use of my knees, but I don't have an ankle. When I go to sit on the floor, it's really odd to not just be able to slip your foot out of the way and make yourself comfortable. You've sort of got this rigid thing attached to your foot which doesn't have a lot of feeling.
So Sarah's a really good friend of mine, and we caught up at the end of last year, and I was telling her about the challenges that Dan had been going through trying to use this first prosthesis. And yeah, she was really moved by the struggles that we were going through, you know, particularly Dan was going through. And she set her little engineer mind to work and, just thought there must be something that we can do to help Dan get a really cool, functional leg.
Whirring away in Sarah's mind was, who could make this prosthetic leg? Enter a Mexican prosthetic engineer named Gerardo, who Sarah met through the Fuck Givers.
Yeah, I'm all the stereotype of a Mexican. Well, I'm in a mariachi band.
But Gerardo also has a few other talents.
The funny part is that I'm a mechatronics engineer. We have mechatronics in Mexico since a long time ago, probably more than 10 years. But here in Australia, people doesn't know what mechatronics is. So I'm trying to explain it like, okay, I make robots, basically.
When Gerardo was studying robotics back in Mexico, he saw a kid with no hand. and felt he had to help. To make the prosthetic as cheap as possible, he used plastic waste.
I thought about using a environmental friendly plastic, and that's how I got PLA, which is corn-based, so it's biodegradable.
That one boy's hand started a whole new way of making prosthetics.
Back in Mexico, I have 50 patients, so I can print fingers, hands, forearms, complete arms. But here in Australia, I want to make a twist. I want to use plastic debris recovered from the ocean so we can solve that environmental problem.
Which brings us to Dan's new leg. 80% of it will be old plastics and e-waste. It's nearly ready.
I've been working on this project probably 3 months. But I haven't met him.
Gerardo will finally meet Dan when the leg is finished.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the icing on the cake, isn't it? We're both pretty environmentally conscious. Couldn't be more perfect.
It's just been absolutely incredible, the level of support and care and love that we have received from people around us, people who don't know us, you know, and we're just incredibly grateful.
Hack. Triple J.
That was Jen, Dan's wife, ending that report by Sarah White. And on the text line, someone says, why are you making me choose a cause? Someone else says, I call it save the world fatigue. And someone else says, I care about family, truth, honesty and my culture. And I'd love to hear from you as well, 0439 75 7555. You're on Hack. I'm Sarah McVee. And we're talking about how to choose what to care about. Do you care that your T-shirt was made in a sweatshop or whether the chicken in your chicken burger had a good life? Peter Singer is a philosopher who thinks about this stuff all the time. Peter, thanks for being here. How have you decided what issues matter most to you?
I've decided that the issues that matter most to me are the ones where I can have an impact on reducing the amount of suffering in the world. That seems a sort of very concrete thing to do, something that is almost nobody would dispute. It's a good thing to do. Other things being equal, we can do something to mean that there's less suffering, whether it's the suffering of human beings or animals. So I'm looking for places where I can have that impact.
That's a lot of causes, though, and we're getting bombarded with causes all the time, whether it's, you know, donating to children in Syria or deciding to go vegetarian. How do you choose how to kind of build a hierarchy into that decision-making?
You look for what you think will be the most effective, where you can have the biggest impact. So one of the things you mentioned was donating to help children in Syria. So you want to ask, what can I do for children in Syria? Is there something I can do? Will it work? Will it go as far as if I donate to help children who are not in a war-torn country, but perhaps are suffering because of malaria or because they don't have clean drinking water? So those are questions you can ask, and you can get answers to that question at websites like thelifeyoucansave.org or givewell.org. They've done the research for you.
And how much do we rely on, say, family values or our intuition in order to decide what affects us emotionally?
Well, what affects us emotionally may certainly be related to our upbringing, things that were in our family, our culture. But I think we want to get beyond that. We might be very emotionally affected by a picture of one child, and we feel emotionally drawn. We don't see pictures of the children who will die from malaria if they aren't protected by anti-malarial insecticide-treated nets. So, you know, yes, we should feel those emotions, but we should not be guided just by the emotions. We should think about those facts about where I can do the most good, not just where I can help this particular baby whose photo I've seen.
Madeline's called in. Madeline, you were working as a retail buyer in fast fashion, and then something happened to change the course of your life. What happened?
I suppose, in a nutshell, seeing the contribution that the fast fashion industry has on pollution and carbon footprint, witnessing crates of clothing that we weren't ready to, weren't able to sell, being flushed and thrown into the tip to go straight to the landfill was a pretty heartbreaking thing to have seen firsthand.
And how has witnessing that changed your life?
Well, I've quit my job to start studying environmental science, and I'm now working for a waste and recycling startup.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for the call. Peter, do we have to be personally affected by something in order to change our ways in such a drastic way like Madeline has?
not everybody has to be personally affected in that way, and I hope that some people just listening to what Madeline said will think about the work they're doing. I know many people who have been affected by reading things and seeing things at second hand, not directly. But of course, it is terrific when somebody who is in the kind of industry that is doing something negative to the planet actually calls it out.
Peter, I'll care about an issue, say, for example, like, you know, where my clothes are coming from, like Madeline was talking about, but then from time to time still buy a cheap, unethically made thing. Why do you think it is that we're willing to compromise on our values?
It's hard to think that every decision you make has to be ethically the best possible decision it could be. And I'm not going to claim that that's true in my life either. So I think you can allow yourself a little bit of latitude now and again. What you really want to think is, am I on the whole trying to push things to a better place, or am I just part of the problem? And if you're just part of the problem, well, you do need to look at yourself and what you're doing. But if you are pushing things to a better place and just occasionally you're tempted to lapse here or there, I don't think you need to get out the sackcloth and ashes or whip yourself too much. I think you just need to note what's happened and say, okay, well, I'll just go on and go back to what I'm doing normally in terms of working for good rather than being the part of the problem.
Are we likely to live a happier life if we just don't care about any of this stuff at all?
No, I think the evidence goes the other way, that people who do care about others, people who are generous to others, people who work for a purpose that they see as important, are actually happier in their lives. They are more fulfilled in their life. There's even evidence that having a purpose helps you to be healthier and live longer. So I think it's really important to us to find those purposes we can really see as truly valuable ones and make them an important part of our life.
You're listening to Peter Singer on Hack. He's a world-famous philosopher, and his new book, Ethics in the Real World, is all about how we can make good decisions in our everyday lives. On the text line, someone says, I feel like the last generations didn't care about the environment and now it's our role to do so. And Jaylene on the Goldie, you say, you choose to care about things you believe in, and if you don't, you shouldn't be pushed to do so. Rachel in Canberra, you actually work for not-for-profits as a communication specialist. What does that mean?
Yes, I absolutely do. So it just means that I help not-for-profit organisations develop strategies around how they might engage people, get solid plans to move forward so that their key messages are getting out to the community.
So basically you make us care about the suffering of the world.
Yes, yes I do. Yes, and that's a very nice way to summarise it.
What does that involve? Like, what are the ways that you can make people care?
Look, through storytelling, I think that is a very effective way. I specialise in the not-for-profit communications in disability and psychosocial disability. So the lived experience and stories and sharing that, it's really rewarding for people to find that connection and that humanity. And also through just delivering really good, researched, accurate, correct information, as Peter was saying.
Hey, Rachel, thanks for the call.
No problem.
On the text line, someone says, veganism is like an all-in-one. It saves animals, it saves the planet, and it improves your health. Well, that's what we're going to talk about right now.
I care about animals a lot. I like to think, because I'm vegan, so I don't eat animals, I like to think my morals are now aligned with my actions.
And how about yourself? Do you eat meat?
Yes, I do.
And do you feel bad about it?
To be honest, yeah. I like to think I'm a kind person, and I wouldn't inflict that sort of harm upon my dogs, so why would I do it to any other animal?
Hack on Triple J.
One of the biggest ethical decisions we make is what to eat. And Peter Singer gave up meat 40 years ago, and he argues passionately that meat eating is wrong for a whole bunch of reasons. And we're going to get to those in just a moment. But if you've thought long and hard about whether or not to eat meat, give me a call. What did you decide either way? 1300 055536 or text me 0439 75755. As Joe Lauder reports, more and more people are ditching meat.
To me, it just all makes sense because it all is linked with each other. You care about the environment, you care about health issues, you care about animals, you care about something, you care about good food. Veganism is the answer. Gosh, I sound like one of those people.
Yeah, they definitely have a bit of a rep. You know that joke of like, don't worry about vegans, I'll tell you what.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I've always sort of gone the different approach because I have always thought that food is the answer. If you prove to someone in that way that they're not missing out, then you'll win them over.
Mo Wise is the co-owner of the Melbourne vegan empire Smith & Daughters. It started out as a restaurant. It's a trendy Fitzroy place and all of the food there is plant-based. But with some of the menu items, it's hard to tell.
People are becoming more aware of it, and not by the trickery. Sometimes people accuse us of that. You're tricking us. It doesn't say vegan anywhere in the deli, and you have Reubens and, you know, sausage rolls, which they don't skip a beat. But outside of that tricking, I think people are making a concerted effort to actually reduce their consumption, which is really cool.
Since their opening, Mo has noticed more and more people going vegetarian or vegan and says it's not just a passing fad.
Trend isn't the right word. It is the rise in popularity. It is people being more aware that they don't have to eat meat for every single meal when they sit down. They don't have to. And that there is a way to prepare plant-based meals that aren't lacking in flavor or textures.
And the stats, well, they back up what Mo is seeing. Michelle Levine is the CEO of Roy Morgan Research.
More than 2 million Australians now say that the food they eat is all or almost all vegetarian. So 2 million vegetarians means that it's about 11% of the population, and that's up from 9.7% of the population 4 years ago.
In some places, there was an even bigger rise, like in New South Wales, where vegetarianism went up by 30% in 4 years.
You've got people eating vegetarian food because of health, so they think they might actually lose weight or it might generally be healthier. And there are some, but not huge numbers of them, who are actually eating only vegetarian food because it's sort of cruelty to animals and those sorts of issues.
But it's still very much a city-based, privileged thing to do in Australia.
It's very much a kind of a Western culture, younger person's decision, though, because basically the research we do in Indonesia, for instance, is that you find with the growth in affluence, the growth of the middle class, people eat more and more meat.
As Michelle said, there are a few main reasons why people go vegetarian or vegan. The most obvious one is animal ethics, and a new Netflix film called Okja has been tapping into that. It's about an adorable genetically modified pig that people get really attached to. Then comes the slaughterhouse. The director based those scenes on his own experience with meat factories in America.
We are animal lovers. Our plan is to expose Miranda, rescue Okja, and bring her back to you.
There's also a growing awareness about the health benefits of cutting down on how much meat you eat or eliminating it altogether. Another issue that's turning people vego or vegan is the environment. The livestock industry makes up about 15% of the world's greenhouse gas emissions. And there's also all the resources that go into feeding the animals to feed the humans. Mo Wise from Smith & Daughters has noticed that more people are going vegan to save the planet.
And I think it's really raising these flags for people saying, hey, there is something to it. It's not just this radical group of young people that pour paint on people's fur jackets. This matters to me, and if I ever want to have children, sustainability is not within the meat industry. It's within plants.
And just lastly, we have Peter Singer on the show today, and when I spoke to you on the phone, you were pretty bloody excited.
So,
big fan.
Big fan. He is the godfather of the animal rights movement. Animal Liberation was one of the very, very first pieces of literature I ever read to lead me to this.
Hack. Triple J. Joe Lauder reporting with a very excited Peter Singer fan on the text line. Sarah from Seven Hills, you say, we do not need to eat animals, wear animals or use animals for entertainment purposes, and our only defence is our pleasure, amusement and convenience. Strong words there. And Jim in Brizzy, you say, eating meat is wrong but delicious. And someone else says, veganism is not the answer. Kaylin from Hobart, you're a vego. Why did you go vego?
I practice yoga and I own some rescued greyhounds, and I figure, you know, we love our dogs. What, you know, I wouldn't eat my dog. So weigh anything else.
Yeah, we do have this weird kind of animal hierarchy, don't we, where some animals are more important to us than others. It's a great point. With us is Peter Singer. He's a philosopher who's written a couple of books about why we shouldn't eat meat. Peter, why do you think it's wrong to eat meat?
Eating meat is wrong, firstly, because the commercial meat industry inflicts a great deal of suffering on animals. There really is no truly humane, large-scale commercial meat production. It's all done from the point of view of economics, of producing meat cheaply, and I don't think we ought to be complicit in confining animals in factory farms and in feedlots. I think that we should boycott those industries and say, I'm not going to give my money to industries that are based on just using animals as things and making them suffer. The second thing that we need to know about the meat industry is that it's a major contributor to climate change. The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization has said that the livestock industry contributes more greenhouse gases to climate change than the entire transport sector, and all the cars and buses and trucks and planes and ships, all of that put together, the livestock industry beats that. So if we want to reduce our contribution to climate change, and I do think that's something we certainly ought to do, then ceasing to eat meat is a big thing.
Do you think the decision to eat meat makes someone a bad person?
I think if somebody knows how much suffering the meat industry inflicts on animals, and knows also that they don't need to eat it, and has available alternatives to it, which, you know, most Australians would have if they walk into any supermarket, there's a lot of plant-based products that can nourish you well. Then I think if nevertheless you're continuing to eat meat, that's not a good thing to do. And although you might be doing other good things, to that extent, you're a less good person than you otherwise would be.
Yeah, see, I've read some of your book, The Ethics of What We Eat, and then yet I still had a beef burger for lunch. What is it that's stopping people from making the move?
I don't really know why you had a beef burger for lunch. You know, what were the other options that you could have had? Was it that you didn't like them, or was it that your peer pressure, your friends would think you had gone funny if you had a tofu burger or something else that wasn't a burger at all?
I guess just how deep-seated are the cultural influences of meat in our culture?
Well, they're pretty deep, but, you know, we don't have to follow them. I gave it up more than 40 years ago when there were far fewer other people that I was in company with when I was a vegetarian, and a lot of people did think I was a crank. But now it's a lot easier because there are so many more vegetarians and vegans around. So I don't think that's an excuse. I don't think the fact that, you know, it's still the majority, the mainstream in our culture, is an excuse for continuing to do that.
I've just been hunting for a story that I'm working on, and the girls that took me said that shooting a deer in the wild is way more ethical because they're involved in the process and the animal doesn't suffer as much. Do you agree that there are more ethical ways to eat meat even though you don't eat any at all?
I think that if you go and hunt a deer in the forest, and if you're an accurate shot, so you can put a bullet through the deer's head and the deer dies instantly, that is more ethical than going down to the supermarket and just buying your packaged bit of pork or chicken, because, that animal at least, you know, was living freely, wasn't locked up in a factory farm without ever going outside, and died much more humanely and quickly if you are a good shot. So, yeah, there are degrees. I wouldn't eat the deer myself, but I think the people who only eat meat that they hunt themselves in that way, as I say, again, if they are good shots and can kill you mainly, are a step ahead of people who buy their meat at the supermarket.
We evolved to be meat eaters, though, and animals kill each other for meat too. Isn't it just the natural way of things?
Well, we probably evolved for men to dominate women, and we evolved to go to war against neighbouring tribes that we don't like. So there are many things that we've evolved to do, or that we could say are natural things to do. But we've rethought them, and we think that they're not good ways to live. And if we can make those adjustments in the case of male and female relationships, and if we can choose peaceful means of resolving disputes rather than going to war, then I think we should also be able to live at peace with non-human animals.
What would your advice be to someone who's sort of on the fence thinking about whether or not they're going to keep eating meat?
My advice would be to try it. Most Australian restaurants now will offer vegetarian and vegan alternatives. So give it a try. I think you'll probably enjoy it, and you'll feel better in yourself knowing that you're doing the right thing.
Peter Singer, thanks for your time.
Thanks very much, Sarah.
Hack on Triple J with Sarah McVee.
That was Peter Singer. He's speaking at the School of Life in Melbourne on Friday. The person that Joe interviewed will be happy about that. And Adam in Brisbane, you grew up on a cattle farm. What do you want people to know about the farming process?
Basically that you can graze cattle on any land. It just depends on how many head per hectare. And that doesn't involve natural habitats being destroyed, for example, the koalas and whatnot. But every vegetable that's farmed or crop that's grown is on cleared land. There's actually more, just as many lives destroyed to feed a meal of vegan food than what there is in turn for a cattle
I guess
or
it,
livestock.
I guess it depends what plants you're eating, but take your point. Thanks for the call.
No worries at all.
On the text line, someone says, what about ethically sourced meat? And someone else says, this chat's making me hungry. Steak for dinner.
I believe humans are supposed to eat meat, but I don't believe in the way that they're held in captivity and the way that they're raised just to be farmed.
I do understand that animals get treated badly, but even one at a time, not eating meat, I don't think is a solution.
At the same time, it tastes so good. Like, it's one of those things I know it's bad.
Hack on Triple J.
With us is Dr. Heather Bray. She's from the University of Adelaide's Food Values Research Group, and she's a meat eater. Heather, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Why do you eat meat?
Well, it's interesting when you do research on this and you start to see your own reasoning reflected in the research. But I do it for a lot of the reasons that we've already discussed. I was culturally raised to be a meat eater, and I guess that's partly habit as well as culture. I am reducing the amount. I don't eat meat every day, and so I think, well, at least I'm reducing it. I worry about waste, and I make sure that when I eat meat, I try to use everything. I boil chickens down for stock. And I also have been involved in the meat industry and have seen a lot of the things that happen firsthand, and I think that I'm making an educated choice.
What's it like to hear Peter Singer say you're a less good person?
It's a little challenging, yes, but I have reflected on it, and I agree with some of the other people that you've called, is that I think if everybody changed, are we really going to be able to produce enough food in a sustainable way? I feel that meat eating is culturally part of Australian life, and for me, I guess I've chosen that my purpose and what I'm trying to do is to improve the dialogue around farming and agricultural practices so that we can find that medium between how we produce enough affordable, sustainable food in a humane way that society finds acceptable.
On the text line, someone says, I eat meat if I know where it's come from and how it's been produced and killed. And you have seen firsthand how mass-produced meat is made. Did it shock you?
Well, I came to it through university study. I guess I wasn't necessarily that shocked because a lot of the places that I went to were considered best practice. That doesn't mean I've seen things that I'm totally comfortable with. And I guess, as I said, one of the things that I'm trying to do now is improve that dialogue. But I certainly don't feel that it's morally wrong to consume meat. I don't feel like I'm breaking my moral code, but I am trying to encourage producers and consumers to think about the way that meat is produced and so that we can have a dialogue about how to do that better and in a way that is a compromise and a happy medium for most people.
You're listening to Dr. Heather Bray. She's with the University of Adelaide's Food Values Research Group. How would you suggest that the intensive livestock industry should change?
Well, there's probably not so many specific things at the moment because I'm just one person, but I think being open and talking about why they do the kinds of things that they do, and we've already discussed that one of the things is the issues around affordability, and I do have concerns that if we made food more expensive, there would be groups of people that would struggle to actually feed themselves. We do have food insecure people in Australia, so I don't necessarily think that making food more expensive is the way, and perhaps people reducing the amount of meat in their diet might be a compromise. But I think at least being open to having a dialogue and being open and transparent is probably the first step.
Thank you so much for speaking to us. I guess just finally, I would love to know what your thought is on whether you think it's ethical to tell others what to eat.
Well, I think this is actually part of the problem we are in a fairly privileged position to pick and choose. And when we start talking about other countries whose food habits might be changing, I think that's where it starts to get a bit problematic. Food is really personal. It's not a rational decision. It's not something that's going to mean the same to everybody. And I think we want to encourage people to be reflexive, but I'm not too keen on telling people what they should eat.
Hey, Heather, thanks for speaking to us. That was Heather Bray from the University of Adelaide. That's all we've got time for. Linda's up next with Goodnight. We'll be back tomorrow. Bye.
Hack on Triple J.